Michael Parker, and D Program on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to the Michael Parker Show. This is your host, Owen Stevens. I'm so excited about today's show. I just got back from the gym. I've had a good day. You know, I don't usually start my day that early. One of the things, one of the changes that I've made in my life is to start my day earlier, to get up around, you know, 7-8 o'clock in the morning instead of 10, you know, and it's by the nature of my job and what I do, I don't necessarily have to get up that early, but I've noticed that I really enjoy my day, you know, way more when I get up early, when I get up around 8 o'clock, when I get up around 8:30. I highly suggest getting up, you know, maybe even earlier than that. My wife gets up around, it's crazy how early she gets up, like 6:30 to 7. You know, by the time I get up, she's already halfway done with her day. It's way better to start early, I feel. So that's one of the changes I've made. Healthy habits, everybody. Those are good things to look out for in the, you know, especially now, especially as we head into this this new world that we're living in. I was, you know, last show we talked about AI and this new, you know, the new artificial intelligence crackdown that's happening in China. I mean, things are about to get crazy. There's a lot of new developments that are interesting and scary and exciting. Think about this, cars that drive themselves. I mean, I was looking into that the other day. Tesla and these people are actually on the brink of creating self-driving cars. I don't know if that worries me or scares me completely, but I don't. Yeah, that's neither here nor there. But this world is going to change dramatically, and that's it's important more than ever to keep your friends and families close and to let's build communities back. Like, that's one of the things that I think I really want to talk about is community and the importance of building a community around yourself to make sure that you're not socially isolated, sitting behind a computer or sitting behind a social media account. All right, is that the way you want to relate to the world, through a social media account? No, you want to do it yourself in person. That's the most important thing you can possibly do, is to get away from social media, get away from the screens, go out, experience the world, build that community, guys, because that's what we're lacking in America, because that's where the power comes from as an individual who has individual responsibility to stand up for your liberty, your freedom, and the values that you hold dear for yourself, your family, and your community. That's my little spiel of the day, just something that I'm so passionate about that I've been thinking about for a long time. And it's very important, especially in this modern world that we're living in right now as it continues to spiral out of control. We're with Joe Connor today. Very excited to talk to him. Joseph Connor, he's testified before the Senate Subcommittee on Foreign Relations regarding President Clinton's 1999 clemency grant to 16 terrorists whose FALN murdered his own father, Frank Connor. The Senate Judiciary Committee in 2009, during Eric Holder's confirmation hearing, and introduced the Pardon Attorney Reform and Integrity Act to Congress in 2000. Mr. Connor has led the successful 2011 effort to deny parole to the terror leader who refused the Clinton's 1999 clemency grant. Joseph Connor, how are you today?
I'm okay, Owen. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we're very grateful to have you on. So we're talking about January 6th today, which is always a fun topic, and a little bit about what's going on with the legal side of this whole thing. One of the narratives, it was so funny. This is perhaps one of the more insane narratives that the left tried to perpetuate and bring forth. As soon as January 6th happened, it was very clear from the beginning, at least from my perspective, that January 6th was the ultimate example of the evil of the Trump administration, of the evils of not only the Trump administration, but the Trump voters and people who think the same way. And we're seeing Joe Biden echo this kind of, these kinds of statements up on when he gives those speeches with that red backdrop. We're seeing him echo this very thing, which is that MAGA Republicans, people who voted for Trump, are the enemy. We're not Americans anymore. We're not fellow Americans who share something. Rather, we are the enemy, completely opposed to everything we believe in, and calling us threats to democracy. He speaks about fellow Americans the same way that that George Bush talked about terrorists. What do you think, first off, not even about January 6th, not even discussing that yet, but what do you think, first of all, about the rhetoric from the left, especially from the Biden administration, when it comes to Republican or MAGA voters?
I think it's obviously disgusting what he's trying to do to this country, but and what he's done to it. But I think a lot of it has to do with trying to separate Republicans from each other. You know, he tries to the MAGA Republicans as opposed to the what Republicans. So there you're trying to make a fight between the non-MAGA, and I don't know, you know, what you, I don't even know what the hell MAGA means in that context, but he's trying to divide the Republican Party, and he's trying to divide the people who would vote against him. He wants to create conflict between them. And if Trump, and it's clearly aimed at a second Trump candidacy, where, you know, he would want them to start being fights between the Republican infighting within the Republicans to nominate Trump. And if he did become the nominee for his general election, I mean, to me, that's clearly what he's doing. And you know, it makes sense, because that's what he's done with the rest of the country. He's pitted
right
group against group. You know, I don't know, you're young, but there was a manager named Billy Martin. He managed the Yankees, although I'm a Met fan. He managed the Yankees and the and the Oakland A's, and he had a strategy of creating problems within his team. He would create bad guys on the team, and that would make some friction and bring out energy and bring out divisiveness. And It worked. His teams did very well when he'd have this, and but it didn't work for long. Eventually, the teams would implode. They couldn't keep it up. But it reminds me kind of what Biden is doing. He's creating divisiveness. He's creating hatred among people. In short term, he could get results from it. Long term, he's destroying the whole society. Really?
To me, it almost reminds me, I think you're right. I think it reminds me, this rhetoric, this divisiveness, like you've said, I think that's correct. I think it reminds me of Barack Obama in a lot of ways, and what he did with race. When Trayvon Martin was killed, what did he say? What did Barack Obama get up there and said? If I had a son,
he would have looked like Trayvon Martin.
Yeah. He would have looked like me. That was such a divisive statement, and an irresponsible statement on behalf of the president of the United States. And Joe Biden is mirroring Barack Obama's irresponsibility. That's the most important thing. These are irresponsible comments. They're maniacal. Yeah. They're making them for like a purpose, a reason. There's a very specific purpose behind all of this.
Yeah, it's not done by mistake. And you know, Biden's clearly not right mentally, but he is fed the right things that he wants to say. And, you know, whether it's Obama with his hand up his back, you know, as a ventriloquist, and Biden's blank face there, you know, repeating what they're saying, what Obama wants, but, you know, it's calculating, and it's evil.
He's not making an attempt to attack Trump based on policy. That's the thing anymore. It seems as if that's out the window. That used to be the playbook, where politicians would come together. There'd be some sort of debate around policy, around who believes this and who believes what, and what direction you want to take the country and what direction you want to take the country.
That's out the window. He kind of can't do that, because on his first days in office, he reversed everything Trump did, and the country went down the tubes.
Exactly. Deeper than that, it's pushing the line. I know. And it's pushing the line of what is acceptable political speech in America. What is acceptable for the president of the United States to say? What is responsible? Right. And for them, it's pushing that line further and further and further. And I don't even know where we go from this, but what I do know is that what they're doing is they are trying to turn this election in 2024 and in 2022. They're trying to turn these elections into turning points for their agenda by maximizing fear, by maximizing tension, and it kind of phrasing it as this end of world scenario, where if Donald Trump wins, then it is the end of America as we know it. Because what is he? He's a threat to democracy, right? So this is all it's like Julius Caesar is up there giving a speech talking about his political rival. This is how the worst dictators in history talk about their political rivals. They talk about them not, you know, around their policy. They don't tend to discuss or criticize them for their policy. Rather, they do it based on their character and the threat that they pose to the regime. This person poses a threat to everything that we've worked so hard for, to democracy itself, to freedom itself. Right. And then it's gaslighting to the extreme.
Well, yeah. Look, the words, you really have to look at the words that they use. First of all, the word democracy is not correct. We're not a democracy.
Yeah,
we're a representative republic. But they set the tone. If they say democracy enough, then people start believing we're a democracy, where then they can start push more for getting rid of the Electoral College. They can, you know, mob rules when you have the majority rules. I mean, so that's what they're laying the groundwork. None of this is by accident. They redefine words constantly. They're redefining what it means for a recession. Oh, we're entering a recession. That's not true. We've been in a recession since the end of the two quarters ago. It's two consecutive negative growth quarters is a recession. And they're saying, well, we're about to enter one. That's BS. We're in it. They redefine what it means to be an illegal alien. They redefine
to be a woman,
gender. Yes.
Yeah. To be a woman. Yes.
I mean, the most basic things in our lives, they attempt to redefine. And I was listening to, you had spoke in a previous show and, you talked about where's the outrage. And you're right. I'm more involved in, I've always been involved in the terrorist side, and people say like with 9/11, never forget. And that's true. But I always add to that, never forget, but always do something. Being passive doesn't help. I mean, we need to stand up. You get your cause, whatever it might be, and you go for, whether it's in the school system because you don't like what's going on in your kids' classrooms, or whatever it might be, even if it's to put a stop sign at the end of your block. Find something that will make the world a little bit more normal where it needs to be. Those little fights, always have to have them,
A lot of people, the problem is that these fights to them see very much in the void. They're very much up above their heads, fought by people who are, whose job it is to fight those battles. And people don't necessarily view it as their personal responsibility to stand up for values, because it's assumed that the government, it's assumed that other better, stronger, more interested people are going to do that.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, if individuals in their communities don't stand up for their own values within their own communities, then this stuff is on your doorstep. And what we're seeing right now, what we saw with the uptick in the amount of people that are involved in teacher-parent conferences and going to school board meetings, parents really viciously going to school board meetings, because a lot of these things are at their doorstep now. They're going into their library and they're seeing pornographic books. Their kids are coming home and telling them about what they're learning in school, what they're learning. Dad, I think I might be non-binary. These weird things, these really startling things. And now it's on people's doorstep and they're realizing, oh my goodness, I have to fight. And that is what it really takes. And that's what's so concerning, because if we don't kind of jump at this preliminarily and attack it as hard as we can, then it's going to really be impossible to stop eventually. We have to go to break, but we'll be right back with Joseph right after a short break, everybody.
TNT Radio's Mike Ryan.
The top official at the U.S. Justice Department was a law partner with Hunter Biden's attorney, Chris Clark, raising serious concerns about potential conflicts of interest as the years-long federal probe in the president's son has reportedly reached a critical stage. Clark, a partner at New York-based firm Latham & Watkins, worked with Nicholas McQuaid on at least four different cases, which he was also a partner at the practice, according to court records. The cases were high-stakes commercial litigation where the pair regularly defended clients facing multi-million dollar lawsuits. McQuaid was named acting head of the Justice Department's Criminal Division on January 20, 2021. That's the day President Biden was inaugurated. Clark started representing Hunter Biden a month before. Hunter Biden has been under investigation by the Department of Justice since 2018, and a probe initially centered around taxes that's reportedly expanded into potential money laundering and violations of foreign lobbying laws. But Quaid's involvement brings up questions about the ethics of the Hunter Biden probe.
Mike Ryan on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
On the day that he was inaugurated, the Washington Post had an article on impeaching him.
I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear.
Donald J. Trump is now president of the United States.
They had an absolute legitimate meltdown.
If you try to change a system that big, the system fights back.
The story behind the biggest election takeover in history.
We're only now being able to finally confirm exactly how this worked.
Mark Zuckerberg and his wife are donating more money to local governments ahead of the election. $100 million on top of a $300 million gift.
The most money any individual has ever spent to win a presidential campaign in the history of our country.
I actually became infuriated that someone had allowed Zuckerberg to tip the scale.
The election was bought way before Election Day.
They stole it fair and square. They changed the voting rules in the middle of the game.
A nation divided.
This was the greatest billionaire assault on election integrity we've ever seen.
A billionaire-funded plot against the president.
Do you believe that they used the COVID emergency as an excuse to pull this partisan voter turnout operation?
Am I allowed to give you a one-word answer? Yes.
Rigged.
It was a rigged election. People have to find out what happened.
At SalemNow.com.
The new communism is COVIDism, mandating that the truth be told. This is TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Michael Parker Show. This is your host, Owen Stevens. I'm joined by Joe Connor. We're talking about the health of conservatism in America, how really the left thrives off of fear and confusion and chaos. These are the things that they are trying to implement and interject into your daily life. Right, they did it very notably with the COVID-19 pandemic. Wear a mask, socially isolate yourself, don't breathe clean air, stick a needle into your kid's arm, vaccinate them, not once, not twice, but three times, probably four times. Yeah. Like this stuff is absolutely ridiculous. And like you were saying earlier, we didn't respond to any of this. And it's seldom that we do respond to any of this with the appropriate amount of rage that is required to actually change it. Talk a little bit about that, because I think that's such an important issue right now for conservatives to really get, you know, away from conserving and staying away from problems to actually being upfront and addressing issues and going to war for what they believe in.
Yeah, you know, it's insidious. I mean, you know, you listen to what Neil Young said. He said, "Rust never sleeps." And I think of that as the Democrats and the liberals. They just never sleep. They're always doing something. And I think by nature, a conservative or libertarian type people, they just want to have their own life and don't want to get in everyone else's business and in their shorts. And they kind of do their own thing. And I think that in this case, it works terribly against us because we want to be left alone. And we believe that everyone should want to be left alone. But there's people out there that love to do everything, whether it's when you go to the garbage dump, they check to make sure you have your sticker in your car. Because if you don't, even though you've lived in town for 20 years, they'll tell you can't throw your grass in the dump. This is the kind of people that are out there, and they're everywhere, and they love this stuff. And you're right. That's why I was kind of alluding to before. Find something you're passionate about. You know, for me, it turned out to be my dad's murder and 9/11 and some other things that, you know, have got me going. But I think we all need it. You can't just go home, turn on the Met game or Netflix or whatever and, you know, forget about life. But you know, the temptation's there. I mean, look, I tell my kids who are now 25 and 23, it's like, you know, the difference between being a kid and an adult is the paperwork. And it's kind of true. Like, you get bombarded. You come home from work, you've been at a computer all day, whatever you do, or at, you know, physical, whatever job, you're tired, You come in and all of a sudden you have 10 emails. You got this bill due, that bill due. Your cable doesn't work. The phone company is calling you. Do you want to get a different phone service? Your bank is telling you that you have to have a higher balance or they're going to start charging you interest. You get so caught up in so many different things that the last thing you want to do is focus on something that's kind of esoteric. It seems like it's out there and it's not yours, but it is. I like music, as you could tell. I mean, Pink Floyd said, "Mother, should I trust the government?" And the answer is no. You trust who you know, right? The government is you hire people to do a job. That's what the government is. You're just hiring someone to do a job. You don't know them and they don't know you. You have to trust yourself and you have to trust your family and, maybe some close friends. But after that, don't trust other people to do what you need to get done. You're going to be disappointed every time. And you're gonna wake up in a world that's not what you wanted for yourself or for your family. We're getting freaking nailed with that right now. And I blame myself. I'm 50. What am I? 56 now. And when my kids went to school, I don't want to know anymore. But my kids when they went to school, they were really good students. So I was like, all right, they're doing a great job in school. They're getting A's. They went to good colleges and. I didn't feel I needed to worry, but that's only part of it. The grades are only half of it. What you really need to look at is, okay, they're getting good grades, but what the hell are they learning? So it's true. Rust never sleeps and it'll attack you from all directions and you got to be on your guard all the time. And it's not just good enough to tread water. We need to push back and it's not just good enough to point out the hypocrisy of the left, which is a full-time job in itself. You got to wield some power to push it back, and it could be overwhelming. I get it, but something's worth fighting for. And this is our country, and without us, there ain't nothing left in this world. Maybe we got the woman in Italy now, but other than that, great. I don't know.
I think she represents a backlash in a lot of ways, but that's neither here nor there. What I'm trying to, I think it's really interesting what you're saying is, I think that we as conservatives who love our country, obviously, we actually bear a lot more responsibility than we like to admit a lot of the time. When you look at the state of our nation right now, whether we like it or not, conservatives, we do hold responsibility. We have that.
Oh yeah.
We have to understand why that is. One of the things about being a conservative is that usually there's a faith, for a lot of people at least, there's a faith element. For me, that's the most important part of my conservative ideology, which is my faith, my Christian faith. Yeah. I'm a born again Christian. That's the most important thing. When was Jesus ever, hiding away and concerned with only himself, right? This is a fundamental Christian belief, to be involved with your community, to be involved with other people. How can you love other people if you do not surround yourself by them? How can you love other people if you do not go out into the world, into the masses, to try to affect change and be part of it for the kingdom of God and for the country you live in? That's the most important thing. This is a Christian belief. And if you're a conservative, why don't we try conserving that Christian belief of actually going out and influencing the world in a positive way? It is not a conservative belief or value to remain hidden behind your door and concern yourself only with yourself. That is called selfishness. Selfishness is not a conservative value. Selflessness is. Right, we're told to be selfless, to put our lives in the line if need be for what we believe in. This is what we're supposed to do, and we have not done that. We have not done that. Look at one of the things that shocked me greatly and troubled me deeply was when Christians were told that they had to in church they had to wear a mask and respect and abide by the laws of a tyrannical government rather than those of the kingdom of God. And Christians went into church every single day, abiding by that law over God's law. Trusting in a vaccine over the healing power of Jesus Christ, trusting in a mask over the healing power of Jesus and what their faith was, right? That is crazy to me. The fact that so many Christians failed in that, they failed in their ability to adequately stand up for what was right, good, and true. And now look where we are, because the warriors of today have failed and they didn't fight. Some did, but
they just didn't fight back.
Big enough scale. Exactly.
Well, they just didn't go to church at all. I mean, the churches were closed, the liquor stores were open. People just kind of used it as an excuse. You've seen what COVID has done. It has been used as an excuse for everything, from the stores being closed to people being late with what they're doing, to not going to work, to doing all this crap. And the same thing happened at churches. People stopped going to church. Now, we went, and my son is 25, and he graduated from Villanova 3 years ago, and he worked for 3 years, and now he decided he was called, and he's looking. He's a novice right now to become a priest. He's a very conservative, very religious guy. He was in a bad bicycle accident, and he feels like right before he started college, and he feels like he was called. And so I learned from him, and it's funny how that can happen. There's plenty of people out there like him or like others who have faith, and listen to them. And the other thing is, as I've learned over the years, is God gives you signs and lets you know if you're moving in the right direction. You just got to be looking out for them, because so many people just either ignore it or they think, oh, that's weird, that's a coincidence. There's no coincidences. When things happen that seem so strange that you can't believe it at certain times, believe that there is that. You are being called, and you are being, nudged in the right direction. And as you said, look, if there's no religion, we don't have a country. I wrote a book 10 years ago called The New Founders, when we brought the American founders back to life in America during Barack Obama's reign. So it was 10 years ago, but things really haven't changed that much. My buddy, Mike Duncan, and I wrote it, and in it, we got into what the founders believed and what they wrote and what they said. And, they believed without piety, without religion, without direction, this country can't last.
That's exactly right.
It just can't, and it won't. And that's exactly what's happening. When you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. Right. And that's what's going on. People don't know where they're going. They just go down whatever path has least resistance. Government will give you this, they'll give you that. And in the book, the American founders were reincarnated in the U.S. and Washington came back to life, and they ran up for president. And we learned so much about Washington, and so many of the things that he did were, so many things he did in the book, Trump ended up doing. It was really bizarre. Some of the things he said and the way he acted was very, I wouldn't say Trump is exactly George Washington. I think Washington really was called to that spot, and maybe Trump was in his own way. But there was it's called The New Founders. You can go online, see thenewfounders.net. There's a bunch of chapters up there, and you might get something out of reading it. Your audience may really like it. So anyway, but our founders really had a deep religion. They had a deep feel for what was right and what was wrong, and they were willing to risk their lives. I mean, they'd have been hanged if they were caught. And we're nervous now. You speak out, you're afraid you're going to lose your job, and that's a serious thing. Losing your job is a bad thing, but in order to fight the right fight, you got to take those risks. There are some things worth risk, and put your faith in God, because God will be there for you. I'm learning that more and more as I get older.
It seems like the harder road. Yeah. Well, you said something earlier that I think is so true, which is that usually, right? It's like the old poem. There's two roads diverging in a yellow wood. Which one are you going to take? Are you going to take the road less traveled, or are you going to take the road that is frequently traveled and is so busy? Well, one of the things that's super, interesting about that, analogy, which I love, is that the road less traveled is harder at the beginning, usually, right? It's got those obstacles in the middle, right? But the end goal the end goal is better. Like that's the whole point of the poem. That's the whole point of this analogy, that even though the road is going to be more difficult, it actually reaches someplace that is valuable to be at.
That is valuable. That's the whole point. Exactly.
Right. And the point is that it's often the journey that is that having a difficult journey is part of how great it is to finally arrive there. One of the things that you said earlier, trusting government over God or trusting government over your family or your community, what that does is that's a very much an easy road, but it doesn't lead somewhere good. It leads somewhere terrible. It leads somewhere where people are going to be, first of all, ungrateful for what they have and socially isolated and obedient. And that is not who we are descended of. We are not descended from obedient and government-fearing men. We're descendants of strong, God-fearing men. Strong and disobedient, right? And that's one of the best things, that's the American soul that is kind of eroding. We have to go to news real quick, but we're gonna be right back after a short news break.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Hurricane Ian rapidly intensified off Florida's southwest coast Wednesday morning, gaining top winds of 155 miles per hour, just shy of the most dangerous Category 5 status. North Korea has test-fired two more missiles the day before Vice President Harris goes to South Korea. Russia is preparing to annex four more areas of Ukraine its troops took control of during the invasion, following a referendum vote that the U.S. claims is a sham.
Do you have a suggestion for a possible guest or host that you'd like to hear on TNT Radio?
Or perhaps you have a topic you feel we should discuss?
Then we want to hear from you. Simply complete the suggestion form on the TNT Radio website. Help us make a difference on TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Michael Parker Show. This is your host, Owen Stevens. Joining me today is Joe Connor. We're discussing America and just this kind of the sad, sorry state of our nation right now. But I do want to get into something that Joe is so passionate about, which is some of this January 6th stuff. So the narrative around January 6th from the very beginning, it seemed, was that, you know, this was the worst day in history since the crucifixion of Jesus, right? Like January 6th to the Democrats, to the liberals, to the left, at least what they wanted us to believe, what they wanted the American public to believe was that this was the worst day of all time. It was, you know, the worst possible thing that could have happened. And we had a technical glitch there. And what do you think about January 6th? And what do you think about, you know, how it's been portrayed by the left right now, and how it's even, I know we're kind of getting away from it. It's you know, years ago at this point, but it's still very much a part of the Democratic, you know, at least their rhetoric, you know, and we're seeing, and I also want to get into what's currently happening with some of these prisoners that were involved with that January 6th riot.
Sure. Well, January 6th was my daughter's birthday, so that was good. But it was also a day that it's also the birthday of Oscar Lopez Rivera, who murdered my father. And same day I went to the prison to keep him in 2011. So January 6th has a lot of meaning in my life. But as far as this goes, look, what happened on January 6th, shouldn't have happened. Okay. People shouldn't have been rioting, whatever they called in the Capitol. I wasn't there.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Okay. I think we could all agree with that. Then the narrative started about all these police officers being killed, which was a lie. Okay. Ashley Babbitt was the only person killed. Right. So now you have lies coming out of something. If it was that bad, you don't have to lie about it. That's one thing you learn as a human being. Don't lie if you don't have to. Like, don't lie anyway. But certainly don't lie if you got the facts on your side. That's just freaking stupid. So now you know that they're lying because they don't have the facts on their side. And that's, you know, okay. So now it becomes all BS. The thing that burns me the most, and I'll take it personally, is that they treated this, as you said, as it was like the worst day in American history. Look, I commuted through the World Trade Center on 9/11. I wasn't in the building. I wasn't in the towers when they were hit, but I was at my office, which was at 60 Wall Street. I was on the 36th floor and I was looking west and I saw the sides of the buildings explode. And I didn't see the planes hit because the buildings themselves blocked my view of the planes, but I saw the explosions as they happened. And my cousin, Steve Schlag, was a bond trader at Cantor Fitzgerald, and he was on the 104th floor, and he never came home that night. I drove his car home from the train where he parked. It was the same place my dad had parked, same train station. My dad, who was his godfather, who was also murdered by terrorists at Francis Tavern, only blocks from the World Trade Center, when I was 9 years old. And the terrorists that murdered my father were released. They were convicted, those terrorists, the FALN, they were convicted of seditious conspiracy. It was a real crime. They blew up 130 bombs in the U.S. They murdered six people. They sent communiques about how the imperialist Yankees will never get over the barrage of the communist FALN and all the rest of that, Marxist crap. They were convicted of seditious conspiracy and weapons possession, bomb making, car theft, you name it. They were convicted of it. They were never specifically convicted of the Francis bombing because they were sentenced to 70 years for the most part in Chicago. And they weren't going to bring them back to New York to face another trial where they would have received a similar punishment. So when I see that the people like the Oath Keepers, who I don't know who they are precisely, but they are being charged with seditious conspiracy. And I don't see them having killed anybody. I see that the FALN did and was charged with that. And the same people who are now have the January 6th people in prison charged with seditious conspiracy released. Let me repeat that. Released the FALN members who were charged with seditious conspiracy, saying that was a political charge in 1999 when Hillary Clinton was running for senator from New York. They were trying to ingratiate her, the carpetbagger, with the Latino community in New York, and they gave these FALN terrorists clemency. The terrorists didn't request clemency. The terrorists denied clemency for 30 days while Eric Holder and others let them have conference calls between prisons. And finally, on September 10th, 1999, they accepted clemency, all but one, Oscar Lopez, and they left jail. These guys were convicted of seditious conspiracy, and those people who were supporting the Clintons at the time, including some who are still around now, called seditious conspiracy, that's a political charge. Now, fast forward to today, where you have the people from January 6th who didn't kill anybody, who entered the Capitol building, which is a public building, owned by the people. And they're now charged with seditious conspiracy. And somehow now it's not a political charge. Somehow now it's the charge that's going to end this country. It just burns me that we had FALN terrorists in prison and were released for cheap politics. And now we have people who didn't do anything near what happened at Francis Tavern or at the World Trade Center were released. Now we have these people in jail without any chance of release. Some of them have been in jail for almost 2 years without facing charges. So
they're not going to be released at this point. I think for the January 6th
people,
they'll
be held indefinitely.
Right. This is a symbolic thing. I think that's the thing that we need to make very clear, that these people were and are charged not with a crime. That's really not what they're charging them with. They're charging them with, first of all, trying to overthrow democracy itself. That's the charge, right? It's not like a crime that we have that on the books. Like overthrow democracy, there's a penalty or a fine for overthrowing democracy. Like, that's not really a thing. This is a symbolic attack, a symbolic sentence, if you will. But these people are not going to see the light of day because they are being used as an example. They are being used as an example. That's really what this is. Because that January 6th thing, whether you believe this or not, it does represent, for me at least, and here's the thing where it gets tricky, because if the people that entered January 6th were actually Trump supporters, which is not necessarily clear to me, because they could be, it could have been
a setup. Antifa. We just don't know.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah, we just don't know. But let's say that it was Trump supporters. Then it really represented concerned citizens who legitimately believed that the election had been stolen by a president who was not legit, who had stolen votes, who had committed fraud on a national scale, and they entered the Capitol out of anger, out of frustration, and out of a momentary rage. Maybe a stupid decision, absolutely. But a decision that deserves lifetime behind bars, absolutely not. But
absolutely
the
liberals, not.
The left, they're going to use this as a symbolic victory. Really, this is a symbolic victory against Trump because they caught the bad guys who are now serving, you know, in jail. And if they let them go, okay, well, then you can release them. Then Trump supporters like that are not that dangerous because they can be let go, right? The problem is that they can't let them go, because if they let them go, then they admit that Trump supporters are able to engage with society again. They can let them go because there's forgiveness. The whole point is that if they forgive these people that did this on January 6th, then that says to everybody that they're capable of forgiving Trump. They're capable of forgiving everybody that voted for him. And that is not something that is in their administration's purview. They do not want to be seen as forgiving. That's the problem right now. There's no forgiveness for the left.
Well, think of it like this. They forgave the terrorists that murdered my dad and attacked so many other people. They forgave them, but they wouldn't forgive Americans for going into a building. Like, seriously, I mean, this is effed up. And they'll also talk about how attacking the Capitol was the worst thing ever. Well, no, in 1954, a precursor to the FALN, a Puerto Rican group, shot up the Capitol building. They shot guards. So I don't. It's just one lie after another, and they count on the ignorance and the American people just forgetting. You know, it's 54 years. You know, 1954. That was 60, almost 70 years ago now. So that's a long time. 1975, my father was murdered. That's a long time ago, but it ain't for me. And it's not for our family. And, you know, I will remind people and, you know, like I said before, always never forget, but always do something. And, that's what this is about. You keep, these people need to be held accountable and they need to, it's frustrating now because we used to, point out the hypocrisy of the left, but that doesn't do anything. They don't give a crap about hypocrisy. They don't care. The way to get them is to get people to vote against them and start seeing what's going on here. And, hit them in their power, you know, and it's all about power. I mean, that's what all this stuff is. They don't give a rat's, you know, what about the American people.
Yeah. We got to go to break we're going to be right back with Joe, everybody, after the break.
Whoa. Peddling fake meat leads to cannibalism?
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
A top executive of the fake meat company Beyond Meat was arrested for biting a man's nose, ripping the flesh off the tip of the nose.
The food company executive was arrested in Fayetteville after police say he bit a man's nose. 53-year-old Doug Ramsey is facing charges of terroristic threatening and third-degree battery. According to the police reports, it happened in a parking garage near Razorback Stadium.
So a fake meat company that Al Gore is heavily invested in and is part of his quest to be the world's first fake meat billionaire has been arrested for eating human flesh? Let's get this straight. Real animal meat is verboten to eat, but human flesh is fine to munch on? There have been climate activists claiming that unchecked climate change will lead to human cannibalism. Well, we may have our first case. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
St. Joseph's Indian School is much more than a school for Native American children.
It's like a family. Classes are fun here. I am learning about my culture.
Since 1927, St. Joseph's Indian School has provided children the education, health care, and support they need to succeed. To help give our kids brighter futures, learn more at stjo.org today.
Support childhood slavery and buy an electric vehicle. We mandate that the truth be told.
Lighting the fuse for freedom.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Michael Parker Show. This is your host, Owen Stevens. Joining me today is Joe Connor, We're talking about, I mean, we've had a really fascinating show. We've really kind of hit a bunch of topics right now. We're talking about January 6th. This is a total symbolic victory for the left. Really, I don't think that these people are ever going to see the light of day again. I mean, we'll see what Trump does or DeSantis does, providing we can get Trump or DeSantis in there. That's really my hope. Well, who is your, this is a thing I'm wondering. Are you going for Trump for 2024, or are you more of a DeSantis guy right now?
I would go for Trump. Either way, if we get either of them in there, I think we've done very well. But I also think that Trump has done the job already. He's proven. And I don't buy it when people say like, oh, well, you know, he's damaged and, you know, let's move on. You know, look, some of the things Trump said, yeah, you know, who knows? He probably shouldn't have taken some of the stand or the tones he took, but he never would have been elected. He never would have been elected if he didn't do those things. He had to do those things. And he, you know what? Screw it. You know, we're past the point now. That's right. That's who he is. And that's who a lot of us are. You know, the Democrats don't play dainty, and we can't deal with a freaking Mitch McConnell up there, you know, talking like blah, blah, blah. We need somebody who's talks straight, talks normal. DeSantis can do it too, but Trump's done it before. And, you know, the fact that their heads are spinning around like Linda Blair in The Exorcist every 5 seconds when he talks is proof that to them, he can take them down. And
CNN should really want Trump because they give him their ratings are sky
high. Their ratings
kick
ass.
Trump is the news best wish. Yeah, that's their dream come true right now. You look at CNN. What do they have to talk about? Nothing. There's nothing to talk about. There's no orange man bad. You know, and that's one of the things about Trump that I think, like you said, his rhetoric, everybody's upset about his rhetoric. When did Americans become so offended that we can't deal with the New Yorker who speaks his mind? Shouldn't we be happy and proud of an American president who speaks his mind instead of a weak, censored president who's afraid to call things the way he sees it?
Think about when Trump was running. Who was the favorite when Trump was running? It was Bush. It was Jeb Bush, mealy mouth, do as you're told, and then you got Trump there. You put the two of them next to each other. Probably okay if he didn't bore you to death at a barbecue, you'd probably tolerate him. But after that, you'd be like, all right, I'm done with this guy. But he was the guy that he was the standard bearer. That kind of guy is who we were thinking. That's who we're going to have like that, you know. And then you had Trump come up. And everyone's like, oh, that's what I was just saying yesterday, you know, over a couple of beers with my buddies. I said the exact same thing Trump did. And then it just kind of built on itself. And quite honestly, I wanted, 6 years ago now, I was a Ted Cruz guy. I like Ted Cruz. I think he's really smart and he, you know, speaks his mind and he's good. And so I was sort of on Cruz's side, but man, you know, Trump won me over and I even did a commercial for him, and went up to Trump Tower and did a commercial about the, you know, Hillary Clinton's involvement in the release of the terrorists who murdered my dad. Never met him. It would have been cool to meet him, but I didn't. Yeah. I'll be a Trump. I'll support Trump. And I think he'll get the nomination.
I think so too. Speaking of him, do you remember CNN Plus, that brief experiment that CNN ran? They tried to launch CNN Plus, this new streaming
service. You know
what?
I took a nap that day and so I missed it. Sorry.
So one of the things that this is why I love Donald Trump, everybody. I'll give you a little quote from the President Trump on the day after CNN decided to close down. He says this, Trump said, congratulations to CNN. On their decision to immediately fold for a lack of ratings or viewers in any way, shape, or form, the 45th president said. It was like an empty desert out there, despite spending hundreds of millions of dollars and the hiring of low-rated Chris Wallace, a man who tried so hard to be his father, Mike, but lacked the talent and whatever else is necessary to be a star.
Holy crap.
That's amazing.
It's beautiful.
He is not afraid. It's beautiful. We love it because these are the people that view themselves as untouchable. And Trump's like, no, no, no. I can touch you.
And you know what he does? He does it simply. Like my son and I were having this conversation. You know, we've often heard people say, oh yeah, you know, we're playing checkers and they're playing chess. And that's why Trump's the opposite. The Democrats, they're all playing chess. He's playing checkers. And it's great because he boils it down to the simple, and he's anything but simple. Like, he boils it down and he hits the spot. Like he'll size you up. He'll know where he can get you and he gets you and does it very, very clearly and directly. We never had in my lifetime anyway, anyone that was anything like that. And, you know, you had like Chris Christie who was pretended to be that. You had John McCain who used to talk like he was that. Then you got the real deal. And, you know, what do you gonna do?
One of the things that angered the left so much was when they tried to – here's the thing. Their power comes from language and from words, right? That's where a lot of their power is, right? And it's from this emotional sentiment. A lot of what where their power comes is from that emotional appeal, those emotions that people feel as a result of what they do. And one of the things that was very clear from the beginning was that they couldn't bully Trump. They couldn't bully him. And the thing is when you bring an accusation against a politician, what are the politicians going to do? Most of them, I released an apology statement. They're
going to
apologize.
They back off.
Yeah, they're going to admit that they're going to back off. Oh, man. Sorry. No, that's all
they
did.
Do that.
Yeah, it's so funny because they go to Trump. They say they go to Trump and they go, yeah, you were mean to women. You did this to them. You were disrespectful. And Trump's like, yeah, I did that probably.
Yeah, she deserved
it. Okay. And then after that, what are you supposed to do? He admitted it. He doesn't care.
Right. Doesn't care. And that just made them insane. They didn't know how to. Yeah, I loved it too, and he continues to do that, and you know makes them lose their minds.
Yeah.
No one had done that and pushed back and rejected their he would turn their questions around or it's just this is what we needed and this country's always been like that. We get the right person at the right time, and he was the right person at the right time, and I think he'll be the right person at the right time.
Inspires a generation. Again. Yeah, there's a generation of new conservatives now that have been inspired by what Trump has done.
Yeah.
By not bending the knee or kowtowing to the left like every single other Republican or rhino has in every single situation. It's like, why do I have to apologize to a group of people that suggest that it's okay to chop off little boys' penises, to chop off little girls' breasts, to reconstruct their private parts?
Yeah.
Why do I have to apologize to people like that? They do not deserve my respect. They do not deserve my apology.
Right. And they're going to come around and start calling everyone racist, xenophobes, misogynists. This comes from people who support the murder of babies to the tune of $850,000 a year. And they have the moral authority to tell me or anybody else how we should behave and that we're racist or misogynist or we hate transgender people.
Yeah,
are they
so annoying.
Me?
Yeah, get out of here. Yeah, that's one of the things conservatives are doing now. Get out of my face. Yeah, and that's the rage. Yeah. We were to tie it back to what we were talking about earlier, that rage that conservatives should feel inside of themselves, that anger when somebody comes and tells you that you need to use a pronoun and you say nah, and they call you transphobic or some ridiculous made up word, some made up label, be like, how dare you? How dare you come up to me and label me like that, you stupid blah, whatever, blank, blank, blank. Let's actually fire back. It's so angering.
Yeah. I know. And I think we're doing it. And that's what we need more. That's why they're so afraid of a Trump. And, DeSantis has learned a lot from that. And you see other people who have learned from that. And I think, you said before, it's inspiring a whole generation of people. And the truth is, I don't want a divided country. I don't want everyone hating each other. I don't want left and right. And you know what I mean? Yeah. But the way it's not getting better by giving in and treading water as the waves of left pushes you further and further to the left, that doesn't get you anywhere. We have to push back, and it's hard. It sucks. Like, you don't want to have to do that. You don't want to have to spend your whole life, pushing back for what you know is right. But but we're living in a world that's right is wrong. The bad guys are the good guys. The good guys are bad. And, It's, you know, I talked to my 84-year-old mother, and she's, you know, she's been through this stuff with my dad murder and stuff. And she just shocked at what has gone on in this country. You know, she came here in 1958 from Ireland, and is a true American, and, you know, is really distraught as what has happened to this country. And sometimes I wonder if my dad would even recognize what we've become.
Well, everybody, that was Joe Connor. I've had such a pleasure talking to him today. What an amazing show, an incredible hour. I mean, I think that right now we are going to witness the next generation of American heroes. Those are going to be the people that did not, those weren't the people, those this next generation of heroes, those aren't the people that sat and did nothing. Those aren't the people that sat in their homes and didn't worry about what was happening. Those are the people that got their hands dirty, that sacrificed for what they believed in and for the values that they held so dear, everybody. Thank you for tuning into the Michael Parker Show. We'll be back with Bob Hoge after the break.